Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 15, Number 6. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was PSN, Number 33, Nutrition Myths. A myth is a widely held but false notion. Unfortunately, much of what is currently perceived as fact by many health professionals and coaches active in the field of sports nutrition today is extremely outdated and based on the perpetuation of myth information. Much of what Western society believes about nutrition in general is a distortion of science and truth, especially concerning the significance of food as a healing device and its connection to chronic disease and premature death. Believing in things without evidence is uniquely human. Needless to say, false beliefs and false assumptions have a huge downside. If we become attached to a certain belief that is false, as many of us do, we tend to resist change, often in the face of overpowering evidence to the contrary. Most of us have been exposed from birth to a huge amount of neatly packaged but incorrect myth information pertaining to nutrition, beginning first in the home via TV, our parents, and extended family, and then continuing in elementary school all the way up through the educational system, including university. Over time, our perception of medicine becomes a paradigm of treatment rather than prevention. It tends to be reactive and panic-driven and lacks the power of independence and self-reliance. A myth is a story that is literally made up by someone or a group of people that has no basis in fact or reality. Every day we're misled for the sole purpose of blind obedience and consumption, to buy into someone else's concept of truth. But thankfully, there's something we can all use to resist deceit and deception, whether it's intentional or not. It's the opposite of faith, and it's the opposite of subjective wishful thinking. It's called objective evidence. On this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is PSN number 34. We continue with the series, Traditional Native Diets. Across the globe, around the planet, Native Indigenous groups of people have lived entirely off the land. Of course, that heritage belongs to all of us. And they did this as a predicate of survival and evolutionary biology. Although extremely rare today, they are and continue to be some of the sturdiest and healthiest people alive. What you think you know about people from the past is scarred with mythology. In fact, most of them were in many ways healthier than the average person today. We're not talking about people infected by ignorance. We're talking about people who lived off the land, who hunted and gathered, who ate natural food, who were lithe and lean and well-structured and fully functional humans. Indigenous third world people today are often limited by financial means. They don't have a lot of technology, and they tend to subsist on a wide variety of local foods derived from both plant and animal sources. Throughout my own personal experience traveling around the world over decades, I've observed locals eating just about anything they can get their hands on, including monkeys, snakes, birds, insects, plants and starches, fruits, root vegetables, and seafood. The list is as long as there are types of plants and animals on this planet to eat. Like pigs, crows, chickens, badgers, bears, hedgehogs, skunks, sloths, squirrels, raccoons, mice, rats, and chimps, humans are omnivores. We're not herbivores. We're not carnivores. We're both combined into what is termed as omnivorous or omnivores. This means we have the capacity to obtain energy and nutrients from both plant and animal matter. And this is an enormous biological evolutionary advantage from a genetic and survival point of view. But the common thread associated with the good health of Native people everywhere, especially in the past, because there's so few left today, is natural whole food nutrition, whether it's plant or animal or combined. The key is natural non-sterilized, fresh, whole food. Now, Dr. Weston Price, founder of the Research Institute of the National Dental Association, traveled the world in the early 20th century to compare the teeth, which is a good marker, a good biomarker of health. He compared the teeth of isolated people living on traditional diets with people of the same age and tribe who switched to modern diets, who got seduced and discovered much better health among the traditional eaters, as documented by numerous photos. This guy took all kinds of photos and actually wrote a great book, which is a classic. It's called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And I think everyone in this field of whole food nutrition, sports nutrition, needs to read this. It's on the website, and you can go to articles and find this PDF book called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. Well, here's a great quote that I really like from Price. Quote, "A critical examination of these isolated indigenous groups revealed a high immunity to many of our serious affections, so long as they were sufficiently isolated from our modern civilization and living in accordance with the nutritional programs which were directed by the accumulated wisdom of the group. In every instance where individuals of the same racial stocks who had lost this isolation and who had adopted the foods and food habits of our modern civilization were examined, there was an early loss of the high immunity characteristics of the isolated group. These studies have included a chemical analysis of foods of the isolated groups and also of the displacing foods of our modern civilization." End quote. Now, he's talking about, you know, civilized people at that time. He wrote this book, which is in the 20s and 30s. And so imagine how far gone we are from even that point. Because back in that time and age, people and kids especially weren't, you know, eating corn pops or Fruit Loops or honeycomb for breakfast. The diet was not nearly as distorted and twisted as it has become, and there was no GMO. Now, in a study published in Nature Genetics, Cooper and his research team looked at calcified plaque on ancient teeth from 34 prehistoric human skeletons. What they found was that as our diets changed over time, shifting from meat, vegetables, and nuts to carbohydrates and sugar, so did the composition of bacteria in our mouth. So bacteria in our mouth is absolutely relative to what we're eating. There's an adaptation there. And it happens over millennium, not overnight. These researchers found that as prehistoric humans transitioned from hunting and gathering to farming, certain types of disease-causing bacteria that were particularly efficient at using carbs started to win out over other types of friendly bacteria in human mouths. The addition of processed flour and sugar during the Industrial Revolution only made matters worse. So it hasn't stopped. It's still moving in the wrong direction, and it is absolutely relative to what humans today are eating in modern times. Now, the paleo diet was originally created by a gastroenterologist named Dr. Walter Voigtlin. He was the first to suggest that eating like our Paleolithic ancestors could make modern humans healthier. In 1975, he published the book Stone Age Diet, based on in-depth studies of human ecology and the diet of men. So that's when this ball started to roll. And Paleolithic nutrition, now as it's viewed, is based on the premise that we modern domesticated humans, us today, are genetically adapted to the diet of our Paleolithic ancestors. And since human genetics have not really changed at all, the ideal diet of our health and well-being is one that resembles a diet devoid of grains, sugars, dairy, legumes, and anything processed. Now think of the foods that people have problems with are not salmon, like wild salmon, or halibut. It's not buffalo. It's not antelope. Okay, what are the foods that people have the most difficulty with in terms of allergies and their own demise? Grains, sugar, dairy. You know, these things really are what's being challenged by this paleo concept. I personally, by the way, I'm all over this. This is just makes so much sense to me. It's smothered in common sense and supported by evidence. Dr. Voigtlin had his patients undergo paleo-like dietary changes that resulted in positive outcomes. And that's the clinch. That is the evidence-based medicine we're talking about. What happens when you do something, when you evoke change? Is it negative or positive? Does it last? Is it sustainable? Does it continue to reveal itself over the long haul, not just the short term, like a day or a week or even 6 months? Years, we're talking. Does the individual continue to stay well and stay lean? This doctor, his outcomes in his patients, he saw a reduction in bowel-related diseases. That's his specialty, right? Colitis, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, and indigestion. Now, how many people? There's millions affected by these bowel and intestinal related conditions, and it has got to do more than any other factor. Even though the conventional doctors say diet is not related, it's just not true. You know, they're following a myth. They're believing in something that's not true. Now, since this concept became popular, like with this book being written in 75, The Caveman Diet, the concept of paleo has been promoted and adapted by lots of authors and researchers and several books and academic journals, but more so by Lauren Cordain, who was one of my guests on SNU. He wrote the book, The Paleo Diet and the Paleo Diet for Athletes, back at the beginning of this millennium. And he's really into research. I mean, I really like him. I like the way he talks and presents. And there's all kinds of YouTube videos you can listen to Lauren Cordain or listen to the SNU that we have recorded with him. It just makes sense. And of course, students that are taking the CSNA like the program mostly because it makes a lot of sense. Now, traditional diets rich in essential nutrients maintain good health and vitality. That's a fact. They strengthen resistance to infectious disease and prevent degenerative disease. So you get the short-term infection slammed and you get the long-term degeneration slammed. It's like a door that's being slammed in both their faces. When you follow a diet that is rich in essential micronutrients. Conversely, displacement of traditional whole food with refined modern food leads to increased risk of infection, weakened immune function, diminished reproductive capacity, and a high incidence of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. As the quality of animal and plant food declines through factory farming and monoagriculture, chronic disease emerges with striking predictability and in an exponential fashion. Remember, the first step of the scientific method is observation. Stop and just take a look around. Look at people you know in your own family. Look at them. Look at their physical bodies and their skin and their face and their hair. Look at them and see whether or not those people and the people you know and when you go out in your community and just take a look around and see whether or not they are the epitome of health or disease. Just look at them. It's so simple. And then the next question is, why are they in this state? Why aren't individuals in an optimum, functional, lean, healthy state, mind and body? There's got to be a connection, Newton's third law, cause and effect. There's got to be an explanation, and my goodness, there is. But that knowledge, that information is purposely, intentionally being suppressed and hidden from the masses for very specific monetary-related reasons. Now, in addition to consuming a much better diet, Aboriginal people are more physically active than so-called civilized people, and they're routinely exposed to environmental supplements such as natural sunlight and fresh air, which also contribute to their overall health and well-being. So it's just not the food. I've said this many times. It's not one factor. It's everything that you can possibly do that conforms to reality and science and reason. It's everything that you can do collectively that makes or breaks you. So the more stuff that you do that's good for you, and the less stuff that you do that's so-called bad, the more likely it is you're going to have less infection and degenerative disease. That's the idea or concept. Now, Native people eat and live the way they do and did out of necessity. But as soon as they stray from tradition, as commercialism and its lust for greed moves in and tempts the taste buds, you know, and you can give simple people luscious treats, and they don't understand nutrition biochemistry. They don't have the foresight or the inclination to even get the connection. So they can be taken advantage of easily due to their own naivety and trust. Like Pinocchio, who trusted the weasel, you know, and he ends up in the donkey farm. That's where a lot of us are. We're on the donkey farm wishing we hadn't done what we had done or listened to the wrong individual. We made the wrong decision. But as this lust spreads, it spreads disease. So as the greed lust takes advantage of our minds, you get disease growing and spreading. And it begins to create a plague, almost like a dystopian future. And it begins to plague and destroy the gene pool of our species, generation after generation, so that we're now getting little kids with cancer, leukemia, and all kinds of weird autoimmune conditions. It's a defect in the species' genetics because of the damage we're doing and have been doing for 100 years. That, to me, is how I see it. And it's moving forward in the wrong direction with greater momentum, and it has to explode or implode on some level eventually. It can't continue because eventually, if it did, our species would die off. We would destroy ourselves through our own inclinations. Now, in basic terms, if you want to be well, you have to live and eat well. It's that simple. Achieving optimum health in today's hectic world is no easy task. I'm not saying this is easy. I'm not saying that you can do this with the snap of a finger. You have to use your brains, and you've got a huge one, especially that prefrontal lobe. It's called reason, rationality, and logic. Rely on that when it comes to food. Do not rely on emotions when it comes to eating. Now, if we all lived in remote areas, like some of these native people do, and spent our time hunting and gathering, and there was nothing except natural whole food and very limited amounts of it, and you couldn't store it, you had to gather every day, that model creates a whole different outcome. But there certainly would be no temptation to stop off at McDonald's for a quick breakfast, or go to Dairy Queen for lunch, or Wendy's for supper, or Subway for a late night snack. These things don't exist out of mind and therefore out of means. They are not even in the consciousness. They no longer become a fact of temptation. That's part of the problem with today's lifestyle. We're tempted, but we still have to give in. We can't blame the tempter. We have to assume responsibility for the fact that we give in to our own lust. And actually, before doing so, we actually give it life by conscious thought, dreaming, imagining how good something's going to taste, while conveniently eliminating the facts like it's going to cause cancer. Now, getting back to the basics and maintaining a high standard of whole food nutrition for the rest of your life, not for today or tomorrow, but the rest of your life, it's the only way to function at our peak. This is what has to be done. It's like the professional elite athlete who returns to simple, basic training techniques when their performance is down. You know, whether it's a great basketball player, hockey player, track and field athlete, if their performance is down, they have to take a step back and through introspection and self-examination, ask themselves, what do I need to do to get back on track? Why is my performance down? And often what they'll start doing is those simple basic drills that they haven't been doing, that they think they no longer need to do. And why would an advanced elite athlete start doing simple basic drills that novice athletes who are just beginning are doing? Why are they doing the same thing? Because they're reliable, and that's how performance is enhanced, by doing what needs to be done from a most basic fundamental point of view really, really well. Now, we can do this. It can be done. But it takes motivation, willpower, and a strong commitment to create and maintain excellent health. You have to want it. You have to want to be well. The emphasis is and must be on functional optimum health, physical, emotional, and mental, inside and out, body and mind. And that, my friends, is just the way it is. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Michael Pollan, American author, activist, and professor of journalism. Don't eat anything your great-great-grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. There are a great many food-like items in the supermarket your ancestors wouldn't recognize as food. Stay away from these.